Hello， 好久不见。如果你听过上期节目《美国新闻专业学生的打怪升级路与归宿》，那你一定还记得嘉宾云蝶曾提到过，他的同学里有人都已经在开自己的电影工作室了。出于好奇，我火速联系到了这位名叫 Balin Schneider 的同学，发现他的电影之路是从他大学时的一次作业开始的。起初只是想为自己喜欢的摇滚乐队拍一支短片，但没想到这一拍就拍了整整五年，最终成为了一部让他自己在电影界闪亮登场的长片。连片中的主人公都对他说，我觉得你现在比我们自己都更了解我们的过去。此后达林便和当年一起拍片的小伙伴共同创立了一家电影工作室，一边给 Blackpink、 黄老板等音乐大咖拍片挣钱，一边为自己做严肃纪录片的梦想努力。我请他聊了聊他与电影的结缘、开工作室的经历，还有他从美国中西部小镇搬到大城市洛杉矶打拼的心路历程，并问了问他除了像奈飞这样的流媒体，除了奥斯卡提名名单，我们还能从哪儿发掘值得一看的纪录片。
This is Dedicated, a show where people share about what they are dedicated to. It could be a career or a hobby. They will tell you why they are so into it, or how they become so good at it. I'm your host, Lulu, and making these conversations happen is what I am dedicated to. You can also tell me what you are dedicated to.
When the power pop band Material Issue was rocking out, Balin Schneider was just born. Yet, it's as if he was right there in the crowd at their concerts, experiencing every beat and melody firsthand, after he spent several years making a documentary about this band. What began as a short student project ended up a full-fledged feature film and something pivotal in his career.That was the moment he decided to do filmmaking for life and found his own production company with the same crew. Now he's not just a CEO, but also a journalism student at USC, wishing to tell even bigger stories after the study.
Hi, thanks for having me. I'm a reporter slash filmmaker. I live in LA, and yeah, I go to the USC's specialized journalism master's program.My emphasis is in international reporting, and I've been making documentaries for about 5 years now, 5 years, something like that, maybe six. And yeah, I love it.
Awesome. So my first question would be, what led you to filmmaking?
I initially was like always very artistic as a kid. My mom's an artist. My grandma was an artist, both painters. And both my brother and I were always very artistic. I did art as a kid, and then I did theater. So I think as a profession, I knew I wanted to do something creative. I love music as well. But I was kind of drawn to film, I think, from just some movies that like really inspired me when I was like a teenager. And initially, I kind of thought I was going to go into narrative filmmaking. But through making my first film, I really fell in love with documentary, and then also...In college, I, for my bachelor's degree, I got really into verite filmmaking and French cinema and those kind of things.
So, you mentioned you love music and your first film is about a band, right?
Yeah. My first film is a feature. It's called Out of Time. It's on the band Material Issue, this kind of 90s Chicago outfit.That were really kind of important in launching Chicago music as we know it.
Stay tuned, because we're Material Issue and we're going to be on this hour right here on JBTV.
I really was appealed to that story for, I guess, a variety of reasons. Yeah, it was my first film. It was super fun to make, super important to make for myself.
I see. So what inspired you to tell a story of a band that's out of time?What aspect of this band drew you in?
Yeah, I mean, I think that aspect where, like, the band literally kind of got I guess, screwed in the mainstream. I mean, they had like two songs that were really big in 1991, like were really going to be like the next big thing. But I think they were going against kind of a changing soundscape for the first time, which was like the identity of grunge was just, you know, taking over the mainstream. But like 6 or 7 years later, you'd have a band like Green Day, who I think very similar, probably a little more heavy than Material Issue. They would come out. So it was just like, they just were like young at the wrong time. Like if they had 5 more years, I think they would have been the biggest band in the world. Because the songwriting is there, certainly. So the kind of the idea, the moniker of Out of Time actually came from the reporter Jim DeRogatis, who's in the film. You know, it just speaks to, you know, a couple things. Also, the lead singer tragically committed suicide. Kind of Out of Time had kind of this double meaning. But I mean, really, I think it means that the band was kind of sandwiched between two genres, pop of like the 60s and then, you know, later on, harder rock like Green Day.
I see. Yeah, and I know originally this was like a 8-minute student film, and then it grew into like feature-length film. Yeah, and that's quite a leap. So what was the turning point where you realized this story needed like a broader canvas?
You know, when I started making the film, I just was like interested in the topic, and it was just kind of my buddies and I driving up from Kansas, where I went to college, and from to Chicago, which was like a 10-hour drive. We just drive and we do a set of interviews. I think what was important about the story is it became very clear that like there was this really dedicated fan base that was going to support the film. And really, it's with that the film got made, and I think kind of also like helped launch my career, is because like the band's fan base really, it allowed us to make the film. I mean, like, so many people wanted to participate in the film. So many people wanted to give resources, to give archival material, stuff like that. So it just became, I think, pretty clear, pretty quick, that it was, like, really important story. But also, like, it was going to be something we were able to do at, like, such a young age. Because I was 18 when I started making it. So it was, like, I had to learn everything as we went. And I think you can kind of tell that in the film, like, it's like definitely an 18-year-old making part of it and then like a 23-year-old making the rest of it. So, yeah, I mean, I think broadly, I think more people are starting to do stuff like that where, like, you know, sometimes when people are in college or, you know, they have this idea and they're like, okay, I have to make a feature film. But if you just like start doing it, especially in documentary, if you just start making it, it'll like, you know, the more you just keep making it, the easier it'll get to make it into a bigger project. I think people tend to think a feature is this huge, scary thing, and like, how can I make a feature in college? But it's like, in reality, it's just a progressive thing. It just kind of happens.
Yeah. So I guess this whole thing make you think, yup, I'm going to do a documentary for the rest of my life.
Yeah. Yeah, I think, yeah, that's kind of the, it became kind of, yeah, I think clear to me that I really like documentary. And I think, you know, like, obviously that's what connected you and I today. And like, I think I like the idea that, you know, you kind of live between two worlds. You live in filmmaking, but you also live in journalism. And I think that's really beneficial to, you know, the viewer and to the person who's watching your work or is watching other people's work, that kind of thing.
I see. So are there any anecdotes during the filming process you want to share? I mean, like, I know you have to interview a lot of people, so is it easy to approach them and make them like talk all the thing you want to know?
Yeah, I was just telling a young reporter friend of mine this, actually, who's kind of going out and doing their first, you know, print reporting trip, actually. And I think the kind of the confusion when people start doing documentary or start reporting or start doing journalism is that, like, people don't want to talk to you. Like, people actually like to talk to reporters or journalists, or they actually like to be in a film. I think the one thing that differs documentary from, let's say, podcast or like print journalism is, you know, podcast, it's like, oh, I can sit behind. I don't have to be on camera. People can't see me.
Yeah.
People get anxious being on camera, but I think largely people want to talk about their experiences. There were a couple people where it took a lot of warming up. There were some people where it was like 2 minutes in, they were ready to talk. For instance, Jim's mom, who's the lead singer of the band, she's kind of like the emotional catalyst of the film. We actually interviewed twice, and I think there's like maybe a soundbite of hers that's like in the film for like 2 seconds, but from the first interview, but otherwise we didn't use the first interview at all. So like there are things that like, you know, I think inherently you kind of learn as you go along, but I think like at the end of the day, people want to talk about their experiences, and I guess it's your kind of job to get them to want to talk about things. But I think naturally people trust reporters. I think people want to speak to reporters. It's just kind of easing them into it, if that makes sense.
Yeah. So yeah, I know like when this band was active, you were just born, so maybe you could only like listen to their songs from records or music videos on YouTube. So have you ever imagined you hearing them like live? Have you ever imagined that after doing all those research and interviews about their stories?
Yeah, it was always kind of like a funny gag when, like, you know, people who, you know, we'd interview who I'd only met over email, you know, they'd be shocked at like our age, or, you know, people even at the premieres. I mean, we did a lot of nationwide premieres and theater screenings. So when we'd go to those, people would always be like, that would be the question usually I get asked in like a Q&A, is like, how'd you find the band? You're so young. That kind of thing. And the fan response to that was like really cool and great. You know, I've gotten to see Mike and Ted, the two remaining band members, play quite a bit. But I think, yeah, when you think about like Jim Ellison, the lead singer, it's interesting to me. Yeah, I mean, like, you feel like after doing a feature, which was like 4 or 5 years of my life, and like, I think I know everything in and out of that band, public and private. Mm-hmm. I think I know, you know, Mike always jokes with me, he's like, you know more than we do. Like, I think it's weird because you have this idea of like, it feels like you know them. Like, it feels like I know Jim. Sometimes I feel defensive over him because like, you kind of spend 5 years just studying that person. But yeah, I don't know. Like, I've definitely been asked that before. Like, do you think you'd like Jim? Like, probably not. Like, he seems like him and I wouldn't get along, but maybe we would. Like, he's a really creative guy. I feel like maybe we're too similar. But yeah, no, I feel like if I like was back in that scene, like, I think I would like their music and performances. But yeah, I mean, that's really interesting.
Yeah. Yeah, so after this film, you founded your own production firm, right? Right after this film.
Pretty much, yeah. I mean, while we were making it, we were like, oh, you know, like, we owned it, which was interesting. Like, usually when you make your first film, like, you don't, you know, your own production company doesn't own it. But, yeah, we launched Arvonia Films, which is the company I work for. Really just named after the street I grew up on. Like, yeah, I mean, there's kind of like, that's kind of like all my focus right now is like, we have some big plans coming for it. And yeah, it's kind of, it's cool that we get to like do our work and work for ourselves. Never thought I'd be able to do that. And it's amazing.
I see. So how big is your crew? Like, and how did you find these people?
So right now, like, our core staff is, like, there's kind of, like, 3 to 5 of us. I mean, there's, like, technically 3 of us, like, and then the other people are contracted. And then, you know, typically in a documentary, I use the same crew. Like, I feel like I'm pretty tight with my crew. I use the same mixer, the person doing the sound. I use the same color people and editing people if they're available. I always use the same cinematographer, my friend Carlos Chavez. He's like my rock and totally, totally one of the best creatives I know. And we just work together so flawlessly. Him and I just shot a film together in Armenia. But yeah, I mean, it's like kind of a little family. And then we're kind of currently launching Arvonia into a nonprofit. So we have this great board of directors, which is about eight really big filmmakers and reporters, and then an advisory council as well. So we will announce that kind of soon, hopefully in the next couple months. But who's on it is really, really amazing.
And do you guys still focus on documentaries mainly?
Yeah. We've done some commercial stuff, which I'm not a fan of, but you know, sometimes it like commercials pay a lot of money, so like depending on the commercials we've done, it's been hard to be like, oh no, we're not interested. That's definitely not something I want to do or I want the company to do, but we kind of have a wing right now, Arvonia branded, which I'm not sure if we'll keep or get rid of, but right now it kind of like helps us, you know, fund some documentary projects and pay the bills.
Yeah, you need something to help you bring in the dough.
Exactly, yeah.
Yeah, so what's been the most fun so far?
I feel like, I don't know, I really like working with, you know, my team, which is our CRO, our Chief Revenue Officer, is Wyatt Gill, and then our COO, who kind of runs our operations, is my dear friend Aiden McIntyre. I really love working with those guys. Wyatt lives in Texas and Aiden's in London. So it's kind of fun to like, you know, all kind of collaborate on the business side of things, like running a business. Like I never thought I'd be like a CEO. I don't know. We say like executive director because I think CEO sounds kind of douchey, but like, I never thought I'd like do that, but like, I actually quite like doing it. I also just love shooting. Like, Carlos and I it was a two-man crew and we went to Armenia, and our subject of the film, it was just like really fun to work on and great people. We had some great associate producers, Margot and Sona, and it was just really fun to kind of, you know, work on that film and be in a new country. That stuff is always like, I guess, the best part.
Yeah, and you mentioned there are a few upcoming projects. So what can we expect? Can you give us like a sneak peek for that?
So we're working on this Armenia short film, which really we're almost done editing. And I'm really excited about. It'll be out this year. I mean, maybe very soon, maybe in May, something like that. But I mean, I think it should be out before May, but we'll see. Yeah, I mean, it's really a labor of love. It has a great, amazing crew, some great music by my friend Amanda, great editing for my friends Abby and Sam, you know, just like a really solid group of creative. And I'm really excited for people to see kind of like that collaborative nature of the film. But also it's just like really visually impactful. And the story is really great. And it's on this teenage girl named Kanar. She's just like so amazing and really inspirational. And then yeah, we got a couple other projects. One's kind of on Russian music, directed by my friend Paulina, and that should be out soonish also. We'll see. Both of those are short films, so
yeah, can't wait to see that. So it seems there's already a lot going on in your company, so why did you decide to enroll in a journalism school?
Yeah, I mean, I think with the program I'm at USC, it's like, you know, you can be a new journalist or you can be completely like 30 years into your career. And I worked in news when I was in college. I worked at a TV station, and I think I did some really good work there that I'm proud of. I've always seen myself as a reporter and a filmmaker first and then a reporter. And I think I really wanted to really hone in on stories that were important to me, which has always been like my interest in international affairs, the Middle East, you know, post-Soviet states, kind of diaspora culture, stuff like that I've always been really interested in. And I think this program's allowed me to kind of like really focus on that. And then, you know, like work on some of the tools of the trade that I hadn't done in a while. But, you know, like it's nice because I feel so like accomplished in the program. I feel like, you know, I can really focus on what I want to do. because of, you know, my film background, but also my journalism background. Mm-hmm. So it's just kind of like really specializing in what I want to do, which I really, really enjoy.
Has your perspective on filmmaking shifted since you joined this program?
Yeah, I mean, a little bit. I think it always kind of changes when, like, a big life event changes. It certainly, you know, gets us to change stuff on the producing end. Like, how do you get money for mm-hmm. each film? I mean, like, that's always, like, the first thing is, like, is a project viable? Can you sell a project? Like, we can't make mm-hmm. a project if we can't make money on it. Which I don't mean, like, I think people also always misinterpret that, where it's like, we're not making a ton of money. We just need to be able to make enough money to, like, pay what we spent on the film. It's less about, like, profitability and more about, like, you know, is this actually viable? Like, will it make back enough to pay our mm-hmm. investors and to pay our crew and stuff that we mm-hmm. front, which is usually, like, development fund and operations and stuff. So I think, like, in the large perspective, you know, it definitely has made me love the reporting aspect more, like, really hardcore mm-hmm. focusing on the journalism and making that kind of the front of each project. But otherwise, like, no. But I don't know. My perspective's always mm-hmm. changing.
I see. So I assume you will make more hardcore documentaries after graduation, right? Yeah, like investigative reporting stuff.
Yeah, that'd be great. Yeah. I always get, like, I love investigative, but yeah, it takes a long time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Are you the only person doing documentaries in your program?
No, there's actually a lot of really great filmmakers in our program. My one friend, Catherine Katia, I'm really excited to see what she comes up with. Yundi, Kathy, and then there's, like, undergrads that we work with. I just watched this cut of a film from my friend Caitlin. She's an undergrad, and it's really cool to see the work and, I guess, the perspective of different people. And I think with our company, you know, like, our plans to really build out an incubator program, which is something we're launching mm-hmm. this year, that allows us to kind of support first-time or newer filmmakers with development mm-hmm. money and staff and resources. And, you know, when I look at these people that are maybe new to filmmaking or that kind of thing, it's so cool to be a part of that. But yeah, I mean, I'm probably forgetting some people. Oh, my friend John Broadway is making a great film. You know, just like stuff like that, where it's like, I think there's going to be some really good doc projects coming out of our program. And I'm super excited
mm-hmm.
to see them.
Yeah. So is it difficult to balance between schoolwork and all this company thing?
Yeah, that is kind of funny. I feel like most of my professors know, like, I work, and I definitely prioritize work. Mm-hmm. Especially, like, I'm in the middle of editing this Armenia thing with my friend Abby. So, like, you know, like, that, like, sometimes I'm up really late. Like, last night I was up really late. Mm-hmm. We were figuring out this part of the cut, which is kind of the end of the film, and we really got it, but it was, like, midnight by the time we got it. And so, you know, sometimes I'll, like, you know, like, last weekend was the Grammys, so it was, like, you know, you're busy partying, you're busy working, you know, so, like, I kind of, you know, pushed back school. You know, some people I'm in the program with, it's, like, their only thing is school, because they're either straight out of college or, you know, they don't work, and, yeah, I'm usually work first, school second. Mm-hmm. Maybe not a good thing, but...
Yeah. Yeah, and how is your final project? Is it completely different from the Armenia thing you were shooting?
No, yeah, I'm using that as my thesis for school. I might do some additional mm-hmm. reporting on it, but yeah, no, that's pretty much mm-hmm. my thesis. Something my company is producing, and then I'm kind of using as my thesis. Yeah, I might do some additional writing or reporting on it as well. Rest assured, you're not alone.
So are there any trends in the documentary industry that stand out to you these days?
Yeah, definitely. There's things I find really morally abhorrent. I can name a few. Like this one, there's a couple really big documentaries out right now that I think are atrocious. Mm-hmm. This Natalia Speech documentary, it's big on HBO. I watched the first season. You know, like, I've heard rumors of them paying the subject, stuff like that, which is totally unethical. Even if you don't call yourself a reporter, you're doing documentary. So it's completely mm-hmm. unethical to pay a subject. One of the Fyre Festival documentaries did that. It was kind of famous for that. Notorious or infamous, I should say. You know, there's like this whole Gypsy Rose thing happening. And I'm not sure, but it seems like, you know, Lifetime is paying them to do the documentary. And that's also just like, once again, not ethical. Like this trend of paying subjects because like you need it, you know? And then there's like other things like, you know, like everything now that kind of sells to a streamer is like you need to have an A-list executive producer, right? Like you need to have like name A-list celebrity executive producing your documentary to be able to sell it to a streamer or like they're not interested or like, you know, that's like 80% of the stuff they're interested in. And that's just like stupid to me. I also think overspending. I think streamers overspend because like most of these people are just executives who have like no production experience. And most of the production companies in the field, you know, like use it to pay their company's expenses and their insanely large food budgets, like stupid stuff like that. Like we're just wasting money. And then, yeah, I'm like kind of anti-true crime or like as I'm not like against it, but like I think a lot of it out there is just crap. And I think usually a lot of them are insensitive and go against kind of the victims. Like, why are we highlighting these stories of like villains, like stuff like that? Those are the large things I dislike in documentary right now.
But usually they're the most eye-catching for the audience.
That's true. And I mean, I think entertaining. Like I mentioned that Natalia Speech thing. I watched the whole first season on like a plane because I was like, oh, wow, this is so like it catches you in. And I think that's the problem with like the ethics of a lot of them. But I mean, if I think if you make an ethical true crime doc or podcast, I think it's fine. You just have to you have to be a reporter. But yeah, no, they're vastly entertaining. Of course, we all love them. Yeah.
You're gonna get the truth. I will pre-warn you, you might not like the truth.
Yeah, but have you watched any great documentaries recently?
Yeah, I actually just watched 20 Days in Mariupol, which is up for the Academy Award. That is like the most sad, raw film I've seen in a long time. I just got a ton of recommendations. My friend Kelly McEvers just sent me one to watch. I also, my dad is trying to get me to watch, this is a very famous film, but it's called Shoah. It's on, I believe, the Holocaust. It's like 9 hours. It's a Criterion Collection movie. So I'm going to tackle that. Mm-hmm. I also always kind of watch like what's coming in the New York Times opinion documentary section. And for this Armenia project, I was really inspired by this film called Oasis. I don't know. I'm always kind of watching different things. Puffins and the New Yorker is a really good film. I'm sure there's more. There's a lot of great things that just came out at Sundance. Ian Von Hoat's film just got bought for an insane amount of money. I'm excited to watch that film. I'm excited to see a bunch of stuff, but yeah, I think it's the latest doc I watched.
I see. Do you like usually follow the, for example, the nominee list of Academy Awards for documentaries? Is that like a good like catalog for like recent great documentaries?
Yeah. I think, like, I read the trades, like Variety and Deadline, like, you know, Hollywood Reporter, like, I also am on this like great little documentary demois thing, which like tells you all the documentary industry gossip and like things that are happening, which is kind of funny. Documentary magazine's great. And through that, like you can't avoid it. Like it'll tell you the things that are shortlisted and nominated and that have won. I mean, I like the, like I don't know, the Academy is what it is. It's like all the criticism that's thrown at it is valid. And like, I agree, like, I'm like, you know, like Oscars are a marketing tool. That's it. I mean, like, I think there's way better film festivals that get better awards than an Oscar. But I mean, generally, yeah, all the docs that are nominated for either short or feature are amazing because they're like loved by the people in the documentary category, which I think are great people. All the stuff nominated this year that I've seen is amazing, in shorts especially, you know. And then there's stuff that gets snubbed, like Daniel Lombroso's film for The New Yorker, Nina and Irina, which is on his grandmother who survived the Holocaust. That was shortlisted, or maybe not. No, just shortlisted, and it didn't get nominated. And I think that's kind of a shame. I mean, that was a really good film. So, like, I don't think that's always predictive, but, like, you can tell what's good from, like, the festival circuit and who's buying what. Like, a good film will be bought or played somewhere. Yeah.
Are there film festivals for documentaries only?
Yeah, I mean, like, industry-wide, you know, and it's interesting, like, I'm not, like, big in that scene. I've always been kind of, like, worked for companies that go straight to streaming or are really indie, or go to bigger festivals. But yes, their, like, biggest one right now is called Doc NYC. That's kind of the leader, I would say, in the doc market. There's Hot Docs. I mean, there's, like, tons of international and national festivals that are just dedicated to documentary. I mean, then, like, Sundance has a documentary competition. South by Southwest gets really high-profile documentaries, which, you know, like, are always really cool. My friend John Lulo's bringing Resonator, this great first-time female filmmaker. I got to watch a cut of it. It's, like, an amazing, amazing music documentary, which, like, is so cool, and it's going to South by... Yeah, I mean, like, there's so many festivals now, which it's, like, I even think a really crappy small film festival in the middle of nowhere is, like, cool. Like, it's people there to watch movies, which is fun. Sun, the moon, the earth, the sky, I'd never even stop to wonder why.
Yeah, you grew up in Kansas, and now you're in LA, which is one of the largest cities in US, and also the city with, I guess, the most extensive filming resources in the world. Yeah, just curious, have you ever noticed, like, any aspects of your hometown find its way into your work?
I think, like, it's funny, like, I was just back for Christmas, and my friend Drew, who actually lived out here for a while, was teasing me for being too Hollywood. I don't know. Like, I've lived in LA for a long time now, so it's like, I think I'm pretty LA now, but I also think, like, at, like, my heart, I'm, like, a Kansas kid. Yeah, I mean, so many of my friends are, like, you know, still living in the Midwest, or, like, moved, like, my friend Noah moved to Montana, and he's, like, the most Kansas person I know, and, like, we talk every day, like, so, like, I think I keep part of my Kansas identity, and it certainly is in my films. Yeah, and like a lot of my friends out here in LA are like from different Midwest places, you know, like, yeah, I'm not like, I don't think I fit well in the like fake LA crowd. Like, I like people who are like genuine and kind of Midwestern, even if they're not from the Midwest. I don't know, I grew up with like two parents from Chicago, so like I don't think they ever felt like they fit in Kansas, but it's very different. The weather's great in LA.
Definitely. Yeah, so, yeah, one last question. So, I know filmmaking can be very stressful, and so is running a company. You've got these deadlines, and also I know as an artist, you have this perpetual quest for perfection. So, when none of this happens, how do you recharge?
I don't know. I think, like, enjoy, like, the things you like. I read a lot. I like to go to concerts a lot. You know, like, I think sometimes, like, the idea of being a reporter is you work all the time. And, like, I do certainly, I work a lot. But, like, I still have friends fun on the weekend with my friends. I still go on a hike. I still go to the beach. I still paint. I read. I play guitar. Like, there are certainly, like, the idea of work being your whole life, like, you just got to get out of that mentality, which I think sometimes in film, especially when you're starting out and you're, like, an assistant, the idea is that, you know, you got to work, 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 work. But, like, I think just being chill about stuff and, you know, like, getting flustered on a project. Like, I just was getting flustered on the Armenia thing, and I just stepped away. Mm-hmm. And then when I came back to it, we got exactly what I wanted. You know, it's just, like, being the perfection thing, everybody gets, even if you're not a perfectionist. And sometimes you just need to, like, walk away for a bit, I think.
Yeah, I think that's it. Thank you for your time, and thank you for sharing your journey. I hope your final project goes well, and all the upcoming projects from Avonia Films.
Thanks.
Hey, thank you for listening. If you like our episodes, subscribe to Dedicated on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you're listening right now. If you want to follow us on socials, find us at DedicatedFM on Twitter and Instagram. If you want to contact us, our email is dedicatedfm2022@gmail.com. I hope you enjoy. I'm